Morning, Oregon, and happy Friday. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thanks for joining me, and I hope you enjoy the show today. This story is part one of a two-part presentation on the industrial-scale drug smuggling operation of the Lotan Blum Dunbar Gang, a seemingly insignificant piece of audacious lawbreaking. Among the eventual repercussions of which would be the fall of Nazi Germany and the atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Buckle up, it's going to be a wild ride. It will take us a total of 6 episodes to get through it, starting today and wrapping things up next Friday. Since these articles were originally published at different times and out of sequence with each other, some story elements will end up getting repeated from one to the next. This one was published on August 4th of 2024 under the headline, Minor Political Hack Became Opium King of West Coast. Here we go. One of the most significant events in the history of the world took place in 1892, when a corrupt political hack named James Lotan managed to land a cushy government job as the head of Customs Inspection Service for the Port of Portland. Believe it or not, Lotan's landing that job led directly to Pearl Harbor and eventually Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and indirectly to the defeat of Nazi Germany in Europe. Not bad for a small-time white-collar criminal in a tiny backwater seaport town on the far side of the world, eh? I realize you may be a bit skeptical of this claim. Bear with me while I unpack it and prove it to you, along with the strong possibility that most of us owe our lives and continued existence of human civilization to James Lotan and the sleazy little band of well-heeled drug smugglers and human traffickers who worked with and for him in the Portland waterfront in the early 1890s. Jim Lotan was, writes legendary Portland historian E. Kimbark McCall, a maverick businessman politician and the half-owner of the Stark Street Ferry. He was a low-level member of the Portland political elite, but he must have been a fantastic networker because by about 1890 he had worked his way all the way up to the position of president of the Oregon Republican Party. Lotan had started his rise to prominence a couple of decades earlier as a shop foreman at the Oregon Iron Works, which was a Portland manufacturing plant that specialized in steam engines and boilers. At some point, he connected with State Senator Joseph Simon, who was basically the head of one of Portland's two major Republican political factions. The other was U.S. Senator John M. Hipple, who served in the Senate under the alias John H. Mitchell, which he adopted years earlier while hiding from law enforcement after embezzling the equivalent in modern dollars of $150,000 from his employer. There's an Offbeat Oregon article about him that you can find pretty easily with a Google search. Anyway, back to Jim Lotan. By working as a fixer and odd jobs man for Simon, Lotan worked his way to prominence, rising within the Republican Party with the fortunes of his faction. He was rewarded with a series of federal political patronage positions, Portland Inspector of Shipping and Machinery, Boiler Inspector, and finally, Customs Collector. Along the way, his fortunes having risen nicely, he was able to join the exclusive Arlington Club and purchase a half interest in the Stark Street Ferry. By the time this happened, though, he'd switched sides and was now an avid Mitchell man. And all these things came together with marvelous serendipity in about 1892 when Simon left the state to join the Republican National Committee in Washington. Into the resulting power vacuum rushed our hero and was promptly elected president of the Oregon Republican Party, with broad agenda-setting power over what got done in Salem. He was just in time to start putting the brakes on all the pesky bridge-building projects that the city of the Portland was getting up to. Naturally, as part owner of the ferry that they would be replacing, he didn't think those bridges should be built. Not at least, unless he and his partners were, compensated for the resulting loss of business. He was well on his way to losing this fight. I mean, you couldn't stop progress, not in 1890s Portland at least, when the city came to the state legislature to request bonding authority to build the Bull Run Water Project. Lotan wasn't a legislator himself, but as the leader of the majority party, he was in a position to set party priorities, and he told the city he'd be glad to put their request right at the top of the party's priority list and help them get their bridges done, too, if they would agree to buy his ramshackle, dilapidated, obsolete ferry from him for $50,000. That's about $1.75 million in modern money, which is not bad, you have to admit, for a boat on a rope. Well, the Portland mayor and city council members raged, but there just wasn't anything they could do. The city needed the legislature to approve the bonds. The legislature was Republican, and Lotan, as head of the GOP, was in a position to lean on folks to keep the city's request from ever reaching the floor. In the end, they talked him all the way down to $40,000 for a ferry that probably was worth less than $1,500 as it sat. But Lotan wasn't depending on this little blackmail scheme to make him rich. Remember that plum government job he landed in 92? Customs collector for the Port of Portland? Yeah, that was his golden ticket. You see, customs collector was what the top local job in the U.S. Customs office was called. Lotan was the big boss, the one responsible for making sure that nobody was smuggling anything through the Port of Portland. Stuff like, oh, I don't know, shiploads of illegal immigrants, steamer trunks packed with illegal drugs, you know, little things like that. Which meant, of course, that James Lotan was in the best position of anyone in Portland to get into the illegal immigrants and steamer trunks full of drugs business. Which he promptly did by reaching out to a business friend, a recently widowed Scot named William Dunbar, probably through the Arlington Club. So the two of them soon had a good working plan, and it really did look like a good one. Dunbar was the owner of Turner Flouring Mills, as well as a wholesale grocery business called Dunbar Produce and Grocery. He also co-owned the Merchant Steamship Company, a shipping firm with a fleet of several blue water barques and two full-size coast trade steamships. The merchant steamship vessels were then busy hauling Turner Mills wheat and flour across the Pacific Ocean to China. Dunbar was the guy who actually opened that trade line for Oregon, but the ships were coming back from China mostly in ballast, which bothered Dunbar a lot. Like a stereotypical Scot, he hated the waste of those empty journeys. So the plan became to fill those empty steamships up with people, Chinese workers who each paid a steep price for the chance to be smuggled into the U.S. to work on labor gangs. This scheme made both Dunbar and Lotan a lot of money, and probably would have kept on doing so if Dunbar hadn't gotten greedy and decided to get into opium smuggling as well. And we'll talk about how that went for them in the second half of this article on Monday of next week. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. And by the way, if you haven't yet, check out our Offbeat Oregon books. They're a lot like these columns, only expanded and updated to take advantage of a less restrictive format. We've got Heroes and Rascals of Old Oregon, Love, Sex, and Murder in Old Oregon, Bad Ideas and Horrible People in Old Oregon, and eventually the plan is for 8 of them to be out, although how many there are out right now depends on when you hear this. They're a lot of fun and would look great on your bookshelf. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do or to find the full citations and visuals that go with today's show. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Offbeat Oregon History episodes are uploaded every weekday morning at around 6 a.m., so it'll be a couple of days before you get your next fix. But of course, Monday morning will be here before we know it. And that's the latest news from here in Offbeat Oregon's Sulphur Springs studio. So now it's time for you and me both to go out there and fill up the rest of the day and the weekend with good stuff. Bye now.